السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وبعد. You know, my role this afternoon, if I have to give you an example, it would be like when you sit down at a restaurant and you're still deciding what to order, and they bring something for you just to nibble on whilst you're deciding what to order. So maybe it's a salad or some papad or something that they put. The speakers that are to follow are the real experts. They are the ones to be lauded, applauded, complimented, and acknowledged because they have dedicated their lives to combating the scourge. And it's not something easy, but they've taken out their time and they've made the sacrifice. And they are the ones who would be able to speak with greater authority and would be able to lean on much greater experience when it comes to the topic at hand. In the few minutes that I have, I just want to outline a few broad points with regards to the scourge in general. You know, there was a time, and I'm here with a friend of mine from Toronto, and we were talking as we were driving up. There was a time when you would hear about someone who unfortunately succumbed, and you would think, no, this is something which predominantly plagues the non-Muslim community. There was a time. Then there was a time, not too long after that, okay, it's happening here and there to some Muslims, but it don't happen to us. And now we have reached a time that there's hardly a family, if not immediate, then definitely extended family, where there isn't at least one case. That's how it has grown on us. That's how the plague and the scourge has spread. Somebody has said so eloquently, that nothing has drained more blood, sold more homes, plunged more people into bankruptcy, armed more civilians, snapped more wedding rings, blinded more eyes, twisted more limbs, dethroned more intellect, dishonored more women, broken more hearts, and wasted more lives than the scourge of drugs. That's where we are. It's one of the greatest challenges that face humanity today, the Muslim community included, affluent or impoverished, educated or illiterate, very pious or impious. It's a problem that we all have to deal with. It's entered the richest of homes. It's entered the most pious of homes. The unthinkable has happened. And to an extent, we have to take responsibility because historically, we were not proactive enough as a society. You see, there's a principle in life. When there's a scourge, it's not one individual's responsibility. It's not one organization's responsibility. It's not the responsibility of a rehab. It's every one of our responsibility because it can happen to any one of us. There was a time when we would think, well, it only happened to teenagers who were vulnerable. Nowadays, you see so many adults, professionals, educated people, happily married people, people leading a prosperous life, not someone who's got financial difficulty or some spousal issue and they resort to this for some degree of escapism. So I'm trying to paint a picture for all of us in terms of the extent of the challenge. Not that it be demotivate us. A Muslim never loses hope. We've seen worse and we've overcome worse and we will overcome this as well. Now, the first point I want to share with you, we obviously focus on when it comes to topics like this around solutions, and that's most important. And I'll get to that in terms of my little input towards the end of my address. There's a principle in life, and this principle is amongst the foremost principles in Islam, and that is prevention is better than cure. Whilst we always give hope, and we should give hope to those who are battling, and those who have succumbed, and those who are recovering, but we know the experts will tell us how difficult, it's not impossible, but how difficult it is to get out of it. And that makes it all the more important to apply this principle of prevention is better than cure. We cannot think that it won't happen to my kids or my grandkids or to me. I cannot even consider myself immune. There are scholars, religious scholars, who have memorized the Quran, who carry the Quran and Sunnah in their bosoms, who have succumbed and who are the victims of this particular scourge. So prevention is better than cure. On the one hand, we don't stigmatize, but on the other hand, we should not desensitize. There's a big difference between the two. In the endeavor to ensure that we destigmatize, because if you stigmatize, you're not going to be able to do what needs to be done. We mustn't desensitize it, that it's okay if you succumb. We must understand how evil this is. When you look at the Quran, which is the primary source for all of us, the Quran talks about intoxicants in the same breath as it talks about idol worship. And we all know that idol worship is the greatest crime that you can commit. Allah says, إِنَّمَا الْخَمْرُ وَالْمَيْسِرُ وَالْأَنصَابُ وَالْأَزْلَامُ رِجِسٌ مِّنْ عَمَلِ الشَّيْطَانِ. So Allah talks about it in the same sentence, because drugs falls in the same category as alcohol. It's an intoxicant. And Allah then describes it as the handiwork of the devil. He describes it as the handiwork of the devil. The long-term solution is in prevention, is in abstention. And I think that's where we're falling short. We're not doing enough to prevent it in the first place, to ensure that abstention happens. And then we think that rehab is a silver bullet. That if it happens, okay, we'll just go to rehab and everything gets sorted out there. It's not that straightforward. As a society, I don't have the time to go into specifics. I'm just throwing out a few broad concepts and thoughts. We have to put our collective minds together to ensure that we can up our game when it comes to prevention and it comes to abstention. You know, in the time of Jahiliyyah, intoxicants was rife. We all know as Muslims about the Jahiliyyah, right? It was not a bad time in history. It was the worst time ever seen in human history. Why? Because of intoxicants. Intoxicants led people to make tawaf of the Kaaba naked. Today, even the most irreligious of Muslims won't make tawaf of the Kaaba naked. That had become normal in the society, to make tawaf of the Kaaba naked, to bury your own daughter. Imagine what it would take to bury your own daughter alive. That's what intoxicants does to you. However, there were people at the time, for example, even prior to Islam, Uthman radiallahu anhu, he never indulged in intoxicants. So someone one day asked him why. He said, because an intoxicant robs you of your intellect. And every time it robs you, it doesn't return in full. Someone else once said, at the time of Jahiliyyah, that by Allah, I'm not happy with my intellect when it's sound. Why do I want to compromise it with intoxicants? So that's the first thing. This is not something which is disliked or something which is abhorred. This is something which is haram. If I put a piece of pork in front of you here, as a Muslim, you'll never touch it. Popping that pill or taking that drug is as haram as consuming a portion of pork, haram meat. And that's where the problem comes in, that it's not only something that affects you physically. The doctors and the experts will tell you about that. They're more qualified. The physical consequences of consuming intoxicants and drugs. But spiritually, you're ingesting that which is haram. Your body is now getting nourished with that which is haram. So it takes you away from Allah. And when something takes you away from Allah, then you're in a downward spiral. So physically it has an impact, mentally and emotionally it has an impact, it robs you of your intelligence, and then spiritually it's taking you away from Allah, making it all the more difficult. That's why again I'm driving home this point, prevention and abstention is the long-term solution. It must become an exception rather than the norm which it is now. There must be exceptional cases where it happens, and then those exceptional cases are dealt with. Not so widespread as it is today. Another thing is, if you look at the world today, right, people spend millions on two things, health and reputation. You defame someone, they'll spend millions of rands to sue you. You've defamed my good name. I'm losing money as a result of your defamation. And health, we all spend. The first thing you look at nowadays is, you know, medical aid, because health is important. When you take intoxicants, when you take drugs, you're compromising these two things. You're compromising your mental, emotional, and spiritual health, one, and you lose your reputation. You put the reputation of your entire family at stake. Because of your behavior, your selfish behavior, your parents find it difficult to show their faces in public. Your father may be a community leader, he may be a religious leader, your mother may be an activist. And you compromise everyone's standing. Everyone that's near to you, that's dear to you, everyone that you love, you compromise their reputation and their state of well-being as a result of your indulgence. You're actually buying ill health and you're buying disrespect. So I've spoken about the fact that it's haram. You're ingesting something which is haram. And you're nourishing your body with haram, your soul with haram. Then you're buying ill health, you're buying disrespect, and you're squandering wealth. The Quran tells us, وَلَا تُلْقُوا بِأَيْدِيكُمْ إِلَى التَّهْلُكَ. Don't throw yourself to destruction by your own hands. On the day of Qiyamah, we will have to answer for every cent that we spent in legitimate causes. Imagine how we will be able to answer for the money of our own and then which we took from everyone else once you become an addict, which you can't even remember. People's hard-earned wealth and squandered it. How many parents have been bankrupted? How many families have been crippled financially as a result of the scourge? For every cent, we have to answer before Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. I know this is hard-hitting, especially for someone who may be recovering. But we have to say these things because on the one hand, you don't want to stigmatize, but you don't want to desensitize. We must be very clear about the position of our deen when it comes to intoxicants. The second part that I want to address you on very quickly is, what are some of the causes? And I'll go through that fairly swiftly because the other speakers will elaborate more. Boredom. Imagine, boredom. And this tells us as parents especially to keep our children constructively occupied. Our homes have become like hotels. I say this always on a lighter note, as a joke, right? But it's got a serious lesson. I got one friend of mine. He's very lazy. He's the typical couch potato. So he tells me, Mana, you know, when I go home, I recline on my couch and I scream, water, water. Either my son or my daughter or my wife will bring me a glass of water. He said, but lately I come home, I slouch on my couch, I say, water, water, nobody comes. So I get frustrated, I woke up, what's happening? The son is on his Xbox, the daughter is on Facebook, and the wife is on Instagram. Nobody's hearing me. So now, he said, I changed tact. When I'm sitting on my couch and I want water, I don't scream water. I just put it in the family WhatsApp chat group. Water. Three of them come with the same glass of water. But that's the irony of our lives. And that's where we create the space for the devil to do his handiwork. Our children are bored. Our spouses are bored. Adults are bored. Because when you're sitting hours on end browsing social media platforms, you're not doing constructive work. And that is when you become vulnerable. Now you're seeing somebody else's life, right? Social media influences, another topic for another day. And then you start feeling inadequate. You start feeling that your life is rather bland, rather ordinary. So this is now what spices up your life. Peer pressure. There isn't enough you can say about this. And the thing with peer pressure, it doesn't only apply to teenagers. You know, Abu Talib, at the age of 80 odd, when he was on his deathbed, and Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is telling him, Abu Talib, say la ilaha illallah, say la ilaha illallah. Why didn't he say it? Because his friends were sitting there. He said, no, they will. What will they say in the community that I have forsaken the way of my forefathers? Peer pressure, how many wives have indulged because their husbands were indulging? How many adults are indulging because they're friends? You want to fit in. In this modern day society, I have to fit in. It's all about, you know, your association. So there was a time when I was in school, that they would only talk about drugs at school level, at university level. It's gone beyond that now. In our communities, in our congregations, the father, mother, grandfather, grandmother, and the grandchildren, whole house are addicts. Whole house are addicts. I'm talking about my own immediate community. Muslims, you would never have fathomed that this would happen. So peer pressure affects and can affect all of us. Then there's the issue of low confidence, low self-esteem. At times when you don't have a good connection with your children, they want to rebel. They want to do drastic things to be able to stand out. Escapism. Sometimes people are having difficulties in life and this gives them a sense of escape. But as Muslims, if we value life, if we remind ourselves, on the day of Qiyamah, not only will you have to answer for every cent you spent, you will have to answer for every second of life that Allah gave you. Now, if you value life, then you live your life constructively. Even when you relax constructively. Even when you're informal in a constructive way. And when difficulty hits you, you don't let it weaken your relationship with Allah, that you look for escapism, you strengthen your relationship with Allah. Because Allah does not test anyone more than what they can bear. They gave me 15 minutes, right? So I'm going to wrap up very quickly because my time is almost up. A few things I want to say in terms of solutions. Like I said, My talk is just like that salad that they put before you even order, right? So the details to all of what I'm saying will come from the subsequent speakers. We've got to destigmatize this. Otherwise, people are going to be too shy to come forward for help. Parents are going to be too shy to be able to admit that we've got a problem in our house. And these things, the earlier you treat it, the better. Sometimes, and I'm hesitant to say this, lower level drugs, easier to treat than higher, but all are problematic. Because it starts, so to speak, with marijuana. And you think, okay, it's not that bad. But after a while, that high is no longer what you're looking for. So you need to now step it up. And you need to step. It's designed like that. It's this is a racket which is designed to keep you addicted. It's designed. Shaitan has his agenda why he wants to keep you addicted. And the people behind it have their agenda because they want to make money out of it. So it's designed to keep you addicted. It'll take you up to a particular point and then you don't realize that point again. So now you're looking for a higher rush and for a bigger rush. So be very careful. It may start with a cigarette. It may start with the vape. It may start with some sort of an addiction or the other. And eventually then it escalates. The greatest form of treatment in the long run is to make sure that in our homes, in our schools, in our communities, we have a religious environment. Now you may think, oh, now Maulana wants to take us out for 40 days, Masturat, and put us in the masjid, permanent itikaf. No, that's not the meaning of a religious environment. A religious environment says you can have your fun, you can have your informal moments, you can have all your activities, but be conscious of Allah all the time. And do it within the framework of deen. When you start stepping out of the framework of deen, that is when you're playing with fire, and that is when you're going to have these difficulties and you're going to have these challenges. The third thing we will say to parents, don't be in denial. Many times by the time you overcome your denial, it's too late now to treat it, or it becomes more difficult to treat it. Don't think, rather be safe than sorry. I say to parents, randomly have your children drug tested even if you're not suspecting anything. What do you have to lose? It's a scourge, right? It's a scourge. Have your children tested. All of a sudden, they'll be more alert. Hey, my parents are serious about this particular matter. Now, if you live an oblivious life where your head is always stuck in Instagram and your husband is too busy fishing or playing golf, right, or pursuing this world and material interests, all of which is nothing wrong with, everything in balance and proportion, by the time you actually realize it's already late. And by the time you overcome your denial, it's very late. I will never say it's ever too late to do anything, but the earlier, the better. So don't feel shy to have your children tested. I think schools need to introduce this. Muslim schools need to mandatory testing, not to expose anybody, not to shame anybody, but to escalate the level of prevention and the level of abstention. The most powerful dua is that of the parents. Look, everything else will take its course, right? Medical help, professional help, rehab, but duas. Imam Bukhari was born blind. He was granted vision because of his mother's dua. I'm not saying dua is the only thing you do. You've got to do the treatment, but don't underestimate dua. Then, and this is a very important thing, our anger should not be directed at the addicts. Our compassion should be directed at the addicts. Our anger should be directed at the drug peddlers, many of whom are from our communities, from our societies, selfishly seeking wealth and in the process wasting people's lives, breaking people's homes. They need to be shamed. That needs to be stigmatized. They need to be rooted out. They need to be ostracized. And for those who are involved in such despicable behavior, think of what you're doing. The perpetual and the harm just continues to compound, to snowball. One addict can bring down his whole immediate and extended family, can bring down an entire congregation. And all you worried about is the pursuit of your wealth. Have you no fear of Allah? You do one wrong deed to one person and Allah won't forgive until that person forgives. When you peddle drugs, how many people are you going to seek forgiveness from? Because how many lives are affected as a result of then one addict? That said, we should not shame the addicts. We should shame the drug peddlers. We should not shame the addicts. We should not look down on them. You know, when you look down on someone, sometimes Allah punishes you by putting you in the same predicament as that person. They are human beings. They were vulnerable. They were fallible. We are all. They made a mistake. And they now caught in a very vicious cycle. We need to put together our heads and put all our shoulders to the wheel to see how we can assist them. And not only them, how do we assist their families? Their mothers who can't sleep at night. Their fathers who go crying to bed at night. Their siblings. You know what this does to a family? There comes a point where the siblings actually will start putting pressure on the parents and say, we've got to cut him or cut her loose. As much as we love our brother, we love our sister, we've got to cut them loose for the sake of the sanity of the rest of the family. Because we know about the violence, we know about the aggression, we know about the theft, that we for our own sanity now, you know what a decision, Allah, it's not something you want to wish on your worst enemy. Where a parent is approached by their one child to say, cut your other child loose. It's time now, he must go his own way in life. We'll make dua, we'll wish him well, but we can't take it anymore. Those families need our support, not our tongues wagging in gossip, making life more difficult for them, blaming them. There's no point. What has happened has happened. Now a Muslim is like one body. If someone is in pain, then we are all in pain. And those who are addicts never lose hope. The famous incident of Umar radiallahu anhu. He told the man who was addicted to alcohol, look, غَافِرِ الذَّنْبِ وَقَابِلِ التَّوْبِ شَدِيدِ الْعِقَابِ. Allah punishes, Allah is also most merciful. Use the punishment of Allah to give yourself some impetus to give it up. But don't let the devil have a double victory over you. His first victory was to get you addicted. His second victory is to make you despondent. Nope. There's no room for despondency in Islam. Actually, despondency is kufr. Allah says, إِنَّهُ لَا يَيْأَسُ مِنْ رَوْحِ اللَّهِ إِلَّا الْقَوْمُ الْكَافِرُونَ. It is only those who don't believe in Allah who become despondent of the mercy of Allah. So whether it's an addict, or whether it's the family, or whether it's the professionals who are struggling to rehabilitate an addict, Allah is greater than the scourge. Remember that. Allah is greater than the scourge. And if you connect with Allah, Allah is promised. And Allah's promise is not the promise of a human. Sometimes a human is genuine in his promise, but he can't fulfill it. Allah says, you take one baby step in my direction, I'll come running you and I'll hug you and embrace you. So never lose hope in the mercy of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. May Allah protect me. May Allah protect all of us. May Allah protect our families. May Allah protect our communities. And whoever is afflicted and whoever is in the midst of it, may Allah help you. May Allah guide you. May Allah grant you the strength to overcome it, inshallah. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Jazakumullah.